Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, March 11th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Russia continues airstrikes in Ukraine as the death toll from the war mounts.
President Biden calls for an end to normal trade relations with Russia.
The Senate clears a spending bill that includes aid for Ukraine.
And Goldman Sachs warns about the risk of a U.S. recession.
New York Mayor Eric Adams unveils his economic development plan. Plus, New Jersey residents say no to self-serve gasoline. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashdower in sports. The baseball lockout is over. Opening day is April 7th. Big win for the Nets. The Rangers lost. Heartbreaking loss for St. John.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 106.1 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are moving higher this morning, and it's coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 17 points, Dow futures up 105, NASDAQ futures up 64, the DAX in Germany's up 1.2%, 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 1.98%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.71%, and NYMEX crude oil is up 1.8%, up $1.90 at $107.92 a barrel. Nathan.
All right, Karen, we'll have more on the markets in a minute, but first, the latest on the war in Ukraine. Two cities in western Ukraine were hit by airstrikes overnight. Those locations had been far from the site of recent fighting. Russia is also not letting up on the city of Mariupol after the bombing of a maternity and children's hospital. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the latest.
Civilians trapped inside the frigid city are scrounging for food and fuel under constant bombardment. Many don't even have heat. Michael Neinheis, president and CEO of UNICEF, says the toll on children is immeasurable.
We've been in Ukraine for 25 years. We have a step in 8 different locations there. They're working directly with children, children that are in bunkers, children that are fleeing.
Ukraine says more than 1,300 people have died in the 10-day surge in the city. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. The U.S. is making more moves to isolate Moscow. Now it looks like Russia will lose its preferred trade status with the United States. And Amy Morris has details from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
President Biden today is expected to call for an end to normal trade relations with Russia, putting them in the same category as Cuba and North Korea. This clears the way for increased tariffs on Russian imports. Biden can't unilaterally call for the change in Russia's trade status. That authority lies with Congress, where lawmakers are calling for that revocation. And sources tell Bloomberg News the president's announcement will come alongside the group of seven nations and European Union leaders, which are also calling for their own repeal of Russia's trade status. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thanks. The Senate has passed a spending bill that includes security and humanitarian aid for Ukraine. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Just over $13 billion of that package goes to Ukraine for humanitarian and security aid. And it's overwhelmingly approved under a bipartisan sense of urgency. Now, for Democrats, completing this bill in an era of hyper-partisanship is a major achievement. The government had been using Trump-era program funding levels since the start of the fiscal year on October 1st, and now domestic agencies will get a nearly 7% boost. The spending bill now heads to President Biden's desk for his signature. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Meantime, we are seeing more financial companies cutting ties with Russia, including J.P. Morgan. And Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
J.P. Morgan is the biggest American bank, and in a statement, it said it is currently engaging in limited activities. Goldman was the first of the major Wall Street banks to announce its intention to exit Russia, saying it is winding down business there. The finance industry titans are joining those in other sectors, including McDonald's and Coca-Cola, that have already said they will halt business operations in the nation as the death toll rises in Ukraine and millions of refugees flee. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. And the war in Ukraine now has Wall Street cutting its forecasts for U.S. economic growth. Let's get that story live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John?
Nathan, there's a more than 1 in 3 chance the U.S. will fall into recession, according to the economists at Goldman Sachs. The downgrade comes as U.S. consumer prices soar to a fresh 40-year high on rising gasoline, food, and housing costs. And inflation is poised to rise even further following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Earlier this week, Fed Chair Jerome Powell reaffirmed plans to raise interest rates this month and commence a series of hikes to curb high prices. The International Monetary Fund also expected to cut its forecast for global growth this year. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Let's turn to China now, where GDP figures are also in focus. Premier Li Keqiang admits it won't be easy to hit the country's growth target this year. And Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more.
The growth rate was set at about 5.5% this year. The comments of difficulty reaching that will likely stoke expectations that more support is on the way. And Li did say that government spending will be beefed up. He spoke at the end of the annual NPC meetings and said that China can cope with the challenge. He said tax breaks for companies will be like giving oxygen to mountain climbers. On Ukraine, the premier said China supports a ceasefire. On Hong Kong, China supports a delay in elections to combat the virus. Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thanks. And Li Keqiang is also announcing an end to his time as Chinese premier. Li says he will step down from his post after this year, pointing to a coming reshuffle in the presidency of Xi Jinping.
And Nathan, turning to the markets now, let's take a look at some stocks on the move this morning. Shares of DocuSign are down 18% in early trading. The electronic signature company forecasts first quarter revenue below estimates. Shares of DD Global are down 20%. Sources say the ride-hailing company halted a plan to list its shares in Hong Kong after failing to appease regulator demands about user data. And shares of Rivian Automotive down 11.5%. The electric pickup maker says plans to accelerate production are being hit by overstretched supply chains.
And finally, Karen, it was 2 years ago today that the World Health Organization labeled the COVID-19 outbreak a pandemic. Now a new study says the global death toll could be 18.2 million, three times higher than official records suggest. The study from the University of Washington points to a lack of testing and unreliable data to explain the discrepancy. Futures moving higher right now. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. It's now 5:07 on Wall Street. We're at 40 degrees in Central Park. We got a crash on westbound Route 80. It's near exit 58. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good Friday morning, Michael.
Good morning to you, Nathan. After 2 years of the pandemic battering New York City, Mayor Eric Adams is hoping to steer the city toward an economic revival by luring tourists back and beautifying the streets.
You can feel the energy. Someone called me this morning. And they said, Eric, I was at the ferry. It was crowded. This was the first week where I had to wait on an elevator because it was so full, you know.
The Democratic mayor unveiled an economic development plan that he said would usher in a new New York.
The recovery is not going to be about getting back to the old ways. It's going to get back to the new ways of doing things, and we're going to take this opportunity to reboot our entire system and make changes that are going to include equity and inclusiveness.
Mayor Adams' plan calls for helping small businesses and cultivating specific industries, including pharmaceuticals, manufacturing, and the legal pot industry. People in New Jersey are saying no way to lawmakers' attempts to allow self-service gasoline. A Rutgers Eagleton poll found that 73% of residents prefer to have an attendant do it for them. Among women, it's 87%. T-shirts and magnets have sprung up saying Jersey girls don't pump gas. It looks like North Korea tested a new missile system. U.S. intelligence has now assessed that two ballistic missile tests carried out late last month and last week involved a relatively new intercontinental ballistic missile system North Korea is developing. A senior administration official is calling it a serious escalation by North Korea and serious violations of U.N. Security Council rules. Jussie Smollett has been sentenced to 150 days in jail for lying to police in a racist and homophobic attack that he staged himself. Cook County Judge James Lynn tore into the disgraced actor.
You took some scabs off some healing wounds and you ripped them apart for one reason. You wanted to make yourself more famous, and for a while it worked.
Judge Lynn also sentenced Smollett to pay back $120,000 to the city of Chicago. And the actor who played Luis on TV's Sesame Street has died. Emilio Delgado died at the age of 81 from blood cancer. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Spring is here, John Stashower.
Play ball, Nathan. Technically, the baseball lockout lasted 99 days, but all in the offseason, though twice MLB announced cancellations of games, they'll end up playing all 162, so nobody lost a paycheck. Players expected to start showing up for spring training today. Mandatory by Sunday, exhibition games next weekend, and opening day, April 7th. It's expected the Yankees will open at home against the Red Sox with the Mets in Washington. They compromised on some economic issues. The minimum salary was raised. The playoffs expanded to 12 teams. National League will start using the DH. Other rule changes could be coming next year. Commissioner Rob Manfred was asked why, when it seemed like the lockout might end, it didn't. And then when it looked like it wouldn't, it did.
Looking back at it, I think we used deadlines effectively to move the process at points in time when it needed to move. And, you know, who outflanked who? My view is there's only one win, and that's getting an agreement, and we got one.
Manfred says he hopes to have a better relationship with players going forward. Nets and Sixers in Philly, first time since the big trade. It was all Brooklyn, 129-100. Kevin Durant, 25 points, and Seth Curry, who was part of the trade, at 24. James Harden, who engineered the Nets trading him to Philly, struggled mightily against his old team, shot 3 of 17. Rangers, who lost the other night 5-2, lost 6-2 in St. Louis. All Islanders, 6-0 over Columbus. The hat-trick for Anders Lee. Devils lost to Winnipeg 2-1. Big East tourney, St. John's was going for a major upset. Blew a big lead. Lost to Villanova by 1. Seton Hall lost to UConn. A win for Fordham to advance to the Atlantic 10. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thank you. S&P futures up 21 points now. Dow futures up 133. NASDAQ futures are higher by 74 points. 10-year Treasury little changed with the yield 1.98%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly sunny today, low 50s. Rainy, windy tomorrow, could mix with some wet snow before ending early afternoon. Early highs in the upper 40s. By Sunday, we'll be in the upper 30s. Right now, 40 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Raging volatility continues to whipsaw global markets, capping the final week before a new U.S. rate cycle. And as worsening war in Ukraine boosts inflation and threatens to sink global growth. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 20 points. Dow futures up 125. NASDAQ futures up 71. The DAX in Germany is up 1.3%. The 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 1.98%. And the yield on the two-year, 1.71%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.3%, up $2.48 at $108.50 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $4.10 at $19.96.10 an ounce. The euro is at 1.0974 against the dollar, British pound 1.3074, and the yen is at 116.92. Bitcoin this morning, it is moving lower, down about 0.6% at $39,100. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Russian strikes have hit near airports in western Ukraine as the military offensive widened and invading troops kept up pressure on the capital, Kyiv, and the besieged port city of Mariupol. Meanwhile, the Senate has given final congressional approval to a $13.6 billion emergency package of military and humanitarian aid for besieged Ukraine and its European allies. Major League Baseball reached a new labor agreement with its players' union, ending a three-month lockout. It paves the way for the season to start next month. In the NBA, the Nets and Warriors won. In the NHL, the Rangers and Devils lost. The Islanders and Bruins won. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And Julie Norman is with us this morning, professor and lecturer on politics and international relations at University College London, with Russia's war in Ukraine now into day 16. Professor, good morning. As Michael mentioned, the fighting has spread now to cities in western Ukraine that had been far from where the fighting had been up to now. And we're also getting reports that President Putin is saying that he's bringing in Middle Eastern volunteer fighters and fighters from other countries to get involved. What does this tell you about where this war is going from here?
Well, good morning, Nathan. And yes, we have seen a different kind of expansion over the last day or two, as you mentioned, expanding the offensive to new cities that had not previously been targeted. And this is, of course, just increasing the cost and the toll on civilians quite directly. It's also increasing the number of people who have been displaced, already over 2 million, and now that will increase in these new areas. And there's also kind of the ongoing slow burn effect of all these things too, the sense that these cities are increasingly being cut off from heat, from water, from electricity, from food imports. And so the humanitarian conditions in these cities where the offensive is extending to just becomes more and more dire as well. We did hear also this week that Putin has been trying to recruit some volunteers from Syria, which is where Russia, of course, was very involved in the Syrian civil war and seems to be trying to play on that that kind of relationship there. I haven't heard exactly how many are actually taking him up on that offer, but there do seem to be those kinds of overtures happening. In terms of where it all goes, again, this is something that we've all been trying to ascertain since the beginning. Again, I think as the squeeze on humanitarian populations continues, and as the squeeze on Russia continues with sanctions, you know, the hope is obviously that there will be a bit more nudge towards negotiations. And there are some tangible things to actually discuss in terms of territory, in terms of proposed neutrality. But I don't think either side is quite at that point yet.
When you think about the war in Syria and the idea of fighters coming in from there, we all remember the atrocities that have taken place over this more than decade-long war in Syria. And now the Russians are putting out these sort of disputed reports about U.S. and Ukrainian biochemical weapons development. It's raising a lot of concern, isn't it, that that could be some kind of false flag for Russia to perhaps mirror some of the same tactics that had taken place in Syria when it comes to banned weapons?
Absolutely. And we see the Biden administration and allies trying to get out ahead of this, as they have with previous intelligence that they had leading up to the current invasion, where they had a sense that Russia was trying to use misinformation about Ukrainian development of something, in this case, chemical weapons, that might actually indicate something Russia itself is planning to do. Again, none of that is confirmed yet, but it is certainly considered a very possible threat. And again, this is something that, you know, we've seen Russia take very costly actions against civilians, not only in this crisis, but as you mentioned, in Syria, also in Chechnya in the past, when Grozny, when cities like Aleppo were, you just had very massive civilian casualties, not only through chemical weapons, but moreover, just through conventional weapons and the use of air raids in particular, which we haven't seen extensively yet in Ukraine, but could certainly ramp up if Russia decides to play that card.
The White House says President Biden's going to make an announcement on further action against Russia this morning. Bloomberg News is reporting he's going to call for an end to Russia's preferred normal trade relations. Do you see that making any difference?
So Biden has been in conversation with European allies about this move. So this call is supposed to come today, most likely in concert with the EU and the G7. For the U.S., it will allow the U.S. to obviously put more tariffs on Russian goods. That's only about $20 billion. Only about 5% of Russian exports come to the U.S., but about a third of Russian exports go to the EU. So if the EU and the G7 make this move in concert, that's more where it will have the effect than with the U.S. But for the U.S., it's an important political move nonetheless.
Only about 30 seconds left here, Professor. Is there a risk that public support for pressure on Ukraine changes if the economic pain gets worse for Americans and Europeans?
Well, obviously, that's been a threat since the beginning. But so far, Nathan, we've seen just unprecedented solidarity from people around the world, but also from the private sector around the world, and really kind of pushing back at this aggression from Russia. With that said, you know, we've seen the numbers coming out this week in the U.S., highest inflation in decades, and just keeps getting higher. So I do think that will affect people's perceptions. But I think anyone paying attention knows that the inflation issue started before the war. It's been exacerbated by it, but there's a lot of other factors going into that as well.
Thank you, as always, Professor. Good having you on with us this morning. Julie Norman, professor and lecturer on politics and international relations at University College London. Futures moving higher at the moment. S&P futures up 20 points. Dow futures up 134. NASDAQ futures higher by 68 points. And the 10-year Treasury right now, little change, yield 1.98%. Just ahead, more Ukraine aid coming in a massive government funding bill. And the war leads to more growth downgrades in the U.S. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly sunny, low 50s today. Rainy, windy tomorrow. The rain may mix with wet snow. Early highs in the upper 40s with temperatures falling through the afternoon. We'll only get to upper 30s by Sunday. Right now, 40 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston, Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960 to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour, beginning with day 16 of the war in Ukraine. Sirens heard again in the capital, Kyiv. The mayor of the city says almost half of its citizens have fled since Russia's invasion began. Cities in western Ukraine are now under attack, too, taking fire from long-distance strikes. In the south, the city of Mariupol remains under siege. The death toll there has reportedly passed 1,300.
Well, meantime, back in D.C., Karen, President Biden is set to call for an end to normal trade relations with Russia. Sources say the plans would allow for increased tariffs on Russian imports, putting Moscow on par with Cuba and North Korea.
Well, at the same time, Nathan, the Senate has passed a spending bill that includes security and humanitarian aid for Ukraine. And we get the details live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Just over $13 billion of that package goes to Ukraine for humanitarian and security aid. For Democrats, passing this bill in an era of hyper-partisanship is a major achievement. The government had been using Trump-era program funding levels since the start of the fiscal year on October 1st. And now domestic agencies will get a nearly 7% boost. The spending bill now goes to President Biden's desk for his signature. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thank you. On Wall Street today, the war in Ukraine has one firm cutting its forecast for U.S. growth. Let's get that story live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Nathan, Goldman Sachs warns there is a more than 1 in 3 chance the U.S. will slip into recession in the next year. The firm is cutting growth forecasts because of the hit from rising oil prices and other impacts from Russia's war. The revision comes as U.S. prices for everything from gas to food and housing jumped to a 40-year high, and that's even before Russia's invasion. For this year, the firm predicts GDP will slow to 1.75%. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Meantime, the corporate exodus from Russia continues. J.P. Morgan is joining Goldman Sachs in winding down operations there. Citigroup has yet to act, but says it's also assessing operations in Russia. Futures this morning are on the rise. S&P futures up 23 points. Dow futures up 147. NASDAQ futures up 82. The 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 1.98%, and the yield on the 2-year, 1.70%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.7%, up $2.86 at $108.88 a barrel. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
5:33 on Wall Street, 40 degrees in Central Park, jammed up on westbound LIE with a crash near Maurice Avenue. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York Mayor Eric Adams unveiled his economic development plan for the city. Adams says it would usher in a new New York. During his news conference, the mayor saluted the truck drivers who delivered goods to stores in the city, calling them essential workers.
You know, onions are not in your stores because someone texts them over. They're in your stores because those trucks delivered them here.
Mayor Eric Adams is hoping to steer his city toward an economic revival by luring tourists back, beautifying the streets and embracing New York's looming legal pot industry. The Biden administration says two North Korean missile launches in recent weeks were in fact test firings of a new long-range ICBM. The tests were of a missile reportedly larger than an ICBM North Korea launched in 2017 that was assessed to be capable of reaching the U.S. The administration warned that a full-range test could soon follow. Actor Jussie Smollett has been sentenced to 150 days in jail for a hate crime hoax in 2019. The former Empire star will have to pay back $120,000 to the city of Chicago, Cook County Judge James Lynn.
I acknowledge there are wonderful sides to you. They're very giving and charitable and loving sides to you. But you have another side of you that is profoundly arrogant and selfish and narcissistic.
Judge Lynn also sentenced Smollett to probation for 30 months. The latest census undercounted Black, Latino, and Native Americans at higher rates than a decade ago, potentially depriving those communities of financial resources and political representation. That's according to new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Get out the key. Unlock the gates to baseball stadiums. There were a couple of times lately when it looked like the lockout would end, and it didn't. And then when it looked like it wasn't going to end, it did. New five-year agreement ratified unanimously by the owners. The player reps approved it 26-4, though the eight-member union committee was all against it. Commissioner Rob Manfred was asked his message to fans.
Looking back at it, I think we used deadlines effectively to move the process at points in time when it needed to move. And you know who outflanked who, my view is there's only one win, and that's getting an agreement, and we got one.
Opening day now, April 7th, they'll play all 162 games, and then the playoffs will be expanded to 12 teams. And now begins the race to sign unsigned free agents. There are some good ones out there, like Carlos Correa, Freddie Freeman, and Chris Bryant. James Harden wanted out of Brooklyn, got traded to Philadelphia, faced his old team, and shot 3 of 17. Nets blew out the Sixers 129-100. Kevin Durant, 25 points. Seth Curry, who was part of the trade, had 24. Knicks are in Memphis tonight. Cam Reddish, who the Knicks acquired in January, will miss the rest of the season with a separated shoulder. In St. Louis, the Blues, 3 goals in the first period, 3 more in the second. They beat the Rangers 6-2. Devils lost to Winnipeg 2-1. Islanders all over Columbus 6-0. The hat trick for Andrews Lee. At the Garden, heartbreak for St. John's. Questionable foul call with 2 seconds left. Villanova made the 2 free throws and pulled it out 66-65. Also at the Big East, Seton Hall lost to UConn. Fordham won to advance at the Atlantic 10 tourney. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. We're coming up to 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams wants to suspend a 25% surcharge on liquor licenses. It's an effort to help restaurants and bars that are still struggling after the pandemic to host the World Soccer Championship, part of an economic recovery plan Adams unveiled Thursday. Amid a nationwide wave of inflation, prices in New York City are rising at the slowest rate of any U.S. metro area. They went up 5% in February from a year earlier, compared with a decade's high 7.9% jump nationwide, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 4 Princeton alumni are donating $20 million to the school. They attended the Ivy League University in the 1980s and went on to become some of the highest profile individuals in the cryptocurrency world. The money will fund a research initiative to better understand blockchain and the technology behind cryptocurrencies. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. Coming up to 5:38 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Ford testing its electric truck as a possible power source for the home.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Thieves are stealing catalytic converters in ever greater numbers, sending insurance claims soaring.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that the electric pickup maker Rivian says its plans to ramp up production are being squeezed by parts shortages.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford and PG&E test the use of an electric truck to power homes during blackouts.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's coming up to 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
The European refugee crises of 2015 and 2022 have at least one thing in common. Vladimir Putin played a big part in causing the former by bombing Syria, and he is solely responsible for the latter with his attack against Ukraine. But the two humanitarian calamities are very different, and therein lies an opportunity for the European Union. In 2015, the EU was divided. To the west, member states led by Germany tried to find an orderly but humane way of treating the asylum seekers while strengthening Europe's refugee system. To the east, member states led by Hungary and Poland closed their doors before the arriving refugees. The situation could not be more different this time. More than 2 million Ukrainians have already arrived in the EU, and yet the reception offered to them so far has been uniformly compassionate. Whatever may divide Europeans, much more unites them, and it could extend to the creation of a military union, a European army, to stare down hand-in-hand with NATO the likes of Vladimir Putin. The bloc's divisions suddenly look small enough to overcome. With luck, Europeans will recognize this historic moment and seize it. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. S&P futures now up 19 points. Dow futures up 119. NASDAQ futures higher by 73 points. And Treasury starting to catch a bid this morning. The 10-year Treasury is now up 2/32 with the yield 1.97%. Patrick Armstrong of Plurimi Wealth joins us next on the volatility in this market. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly sunny, low 50s today. Rainy, windy, maybe some wet snow tomorrow. Early highs in the upper 40s with temperatures falling through the afternoon. Sunny, breezy Sunday, upper 30s. Right now, 40 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And raging volatility is whipsawing global markets, capping the final week before a new U.S. rate hike cycle as a worsening war in Ukraine boosts inflation and threatens to sink global growth. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures up about 18 points. Dow futures up 110. NASDAQ futures up 65. The DAX in Germany is up 1.25%. The 10-year Treasury up 1/32, the yield 1.98%, the yield on the 2-year 1.70%. NYMEX crude oil is up 3.33%, up $3.59 at $109.61 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $3.60 at $19.96.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0981 against the dollar, British pound 1.3085, the yen's at 116.86. And Bitcoin this morning moving lower at $39,000. It's down about 0.8%. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. Russian strikes have hit near airports in western Ukraine. It comes as the mayor of Kyiv says that almost half the capital's citizens have fled since Russia began attacking the city. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden plans to announce that along with the European Union and the group of seven countries, the U.S. will move to revoke most favored nation trade status for Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Major League Baseball reached a new labor agreement with its players' union, ending a 3-month lockout. It paves the way for the season to start next month. In the NBA, the Nets and Warriors won. In the NHL, the Rangers and Devils lost. The Islanders and Bruins won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We're really pleased to be joined now by Patrick Armstrong, Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth, to try to make sense of what has been a very wild week for markets. Patrick, good morning. With a war on and inflation in the front burner now, how much more volatility should we be expecting?
There's going to be a lot of volatility. The environment we're in, it's not a short-term environment. I think we're in probably for years to come, a stagflationary environment where the pendulum has swung from globalization, outsourcing, manufacturing to where things could be done cheaper to a protectionist environment where there's sanctions and trade wars and real wars, unfortunately. So you've got that as one part of the backdrop, and you've got a Fed who's going to be hiking and withdrawing liquidity. So that's the perfect recipe for volatility.
You have the S word there. How long do you think this stagflation could last?
I think it's ahead of us for years. So it doesn't mean recessionary inflation, but it means growth that's waning with very sticky inflation. And in the short term, inflation is going to be moving higher, not lower. Probably the most similar environment that we're going to be facing in the coming years is similar to what we were coming out of 1972, going into 1973 with the oil crisis in the United States. So the world just getting past the Vietnam War, and then the Iran Revolution led to supply disruption on oil, higher prices, lower growth, and a Fed that felt they had to fight to hike despite the slowing growth.
Of course, Goldman Sachs is getting a lot of attention this morning for coming out with a call that there's a 1 in 3 chance of recession in the U.S. into next year. Is that a good call? Is that the way you see it?
I'd say a little bit less in the United States. I'd say Europe is probably going to go into a recession in the next year just because utility bills, energy prices, gas prices matter more to Europe, and the commodity prices are just higher in Europe. You've got cheaper natural gas in America. U.S., I don't think we'll fall into a recession, but it's definitely something you should be aware of. You shouldn't be investing thinking it's a blue sky. There are recessionary headwinds. Recession is a possibility. And I think 1 in 3 is a little high for the U.S., but that's probably too low for Europe.
On the point of the U.S. or the U.S. economy being different from Europe's, obviously the ECB is taking away support a lot more quickly than a lot of analysts and investors had expected. Is that something that could move the Fed, do you think?
I don't think so. I think it's the ECB reacting to the Fed. And even though it is a little bit more hawkish than we expected, it's still a relative loosening if you have a Fed doing what the market's indicating. So I don't think the Fed will be hiking as much as just the market is indicating, but they're definitely on a hiking cycle now, and the bond buying from the Fed is done. So despite a lower growth backdrop, I don't see many scenarios where we've got 2% 10-year yields by the end of the year. I think we'll have 10-year yields rising despite the slower growth profile.
Well, how much more hiking are you expecting from the Fed? What's your call in terms of the rate hike picture this year?
I think there'll be 4 hikes this year, which is just the Fed making sure the world knows they're not asleep at the wheel, that they're addressing the inflation that's clearly there, but they're also aware of the geopolitical risks and aware of the impact on higher gas prices has on the economy. So higher gas prices create the inflation that the Fed don't like, but that's also part of the tightening as well, that it disrupts some demand from consumers as well.
So in our last 30 seconds here, with all this in the backdrop, where do you put your money? What are you advising your clients right now?
You should be investing in things, if you want to look for equities, own companies that own assets that are in short supply. What we've been buying recently is agribusiness equities. We think potash, fertilizer, even tractors, John Deere. Those farmers are going to be getting a lot of cash flow for their crops as basically Ukrainian and Russian supply of wheat is going to be disrupted. I think you want to own commodities and you want to be short the long duration equities, which are those dream tech stocks that have no earnings and still trading at very lofty multiples despite 50% sell-off so far.
Big pivot ahead. Thanks for this, Patrick. Good having you on. Really appreciate it. Patrick Armstrong, Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth. Karen.
Nathan, it is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Attorneys see potential legal problems over OSHA's proposed worker heat protection rule, among them an argument that the agency is trying to regulate a public health hazard.
A filing in a New York federal court indicates three consumers agreed to end claims alleging that Procter & Gamble's Crest gum and enamel repair toothpaste was deceptively marketed. A federal judge in Connecticut awarded additional damages to three female tech support workers who sued New England Computer Services for sex bias.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Jeff, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching brings us to last year's attack on the Capitol. The first person to go on trial over charges stemming from the insurrection was found guilty of obstruction of Congress and four other counts. The jury convicted Guy Reffitt, a Texas member of the Three Percenters militia group, who was turned in by his own son. For more on the case, June Grasso speaks to Bloomberg legal reporter Eric Larson.
Let's talk about the prosecution's case. And what was so unusual and telling was that his son was the government's star witness against him.
That was a real twist. His then 18-year-old son contacted the FBI, informed them about his father's involvement in the riots, and even went so far as to secretly record his father talking at the kitchen table. He put his iPhone down on the table and just let his father speak as he was bragging about all of his activities on January 6th. So he really went pretty far in trying to help the government. And one of his reasons for doing so is that at one point, as his father realized that so many rioters were being arrested and charged, he threatened his children to keep them quiet, knowing that they had different political views than he did and knowing that they had some pretty incriminating information. He told them that speaking with law enforcement would be treason and that traitors get shot, as they put it. You know, it was really a lot of evidence, I have to say. They showed the video footage of people attacking. They had witnesses talk from the Senate floor explaining how they had to abandon the session. They showed cell phone footage from other rioters, Mr. Reffitt's own helmet-mounted camera, his Zoom calls with other militia leaders, things like that. So they really put it all out there.
The jury didn't take very long to come back with guilty on all charges. Was this trial a test for prosecutors in some ways?
I would say so. I think that especially the obstruction of Congress charge, there's been some dispute over whether or not Congress was technically in session at the moment that the Capitol was breached and whether or not the certification of the votes qualifies as the kind of legal proceeding that can be obstructed, sort of technical arguments around that. And the judge had denied a motion to dismiss that charge earlier. And of course, it went to trial and the jury agreed based on the evidence that Congress was in session, that what was happening was an official proceeding of the government, and that it was obstructed by the action. So I did speak with a former federal prosecutor who said that that was an important test to see if a jury would agree that Congress had been obstructed, since that is a charge that we'll see in so many of these cases.
And that's Bloomberg legal reporter Eric Larson speaking with June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. And futures this morning are on the rise. S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 132. NASDAQ futures up 78. And the 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.97%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.70%. Still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.